writers like more than waxing lyrical about the process of writing? Luckily, there's nothing I like more than listening to other writers waxing their lyrics. So I thought it'd be interesting to combine the two and see what happens. Welcome to Bashing Keys. Today I'm chatting to Paul Carenza, who has written for everything on Radio 4 and for TV on the sitcoms Not Going Out and Miranda. He's also a stand-up comedian and the co-host of the popular podcast Movie Banter. Hello, Paul Carenza.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well.
Good. I think my first question is, do you feel like a writer, or do you still feel like a fraud at keyboard, which I do?
I feel like, because I occupy that odd position of stand-up and writer. But I wouldn't say stand-up and writer. I'd say stand-up slash writer, which sort of means I'm half of both. And so I do feel like I'm a bit of a fraud at both. Well, more so a fraud at being a writer, I think, because as a stand-up, it's easier to say I'm a stand-up because you stand up and you tell jokes and you walk off stage. And if you finish a 20-minute set and you get a booking for the same club, then I think you can say, yes, I am a stand-up comedian. Whereas being a writer is such a longer process. I heard that interview with Russell T. Davis years ago, who has a slightly harsher view of what a writer is. Because I forget that some American, I can't remember who it was, but some American had this definition of a writer. Stephen King. Stephen King said, if you have written anything that has ever been sold and you've got a £10 cheque for it and you've banked that cheque and you paid your electricity bill with that cheque, then you're a writer. Right. So it could have been a advertising copy, it could be a slogan, it could be a birthday card greeting, it could be a joke on a radio show, it could be a full script, whatever. That's, you know, Stephen King says, you're a writer if you've been paid to write once. Russell T. Davis says, you're not a writer unless you have finished and had broadcast at least a half hour narrative pilot, or, you know, ideally an hour and a half. He's got a much stricter view of it. And so by Stephen King's definition, I'm a writer. By Russell D. Davis's definition, I'm not a writer.
Well, you technically are. You've had a half hour on...
Well, that's the thing. He would say, you know, but I was writing that with other people, and I was sort of, you know, additional material for some, and then for some of them we're team writing and all around a table. But, you know, all of those were someone else's idea that I sort of have come in on. And yeah, I've got ideas of my own. I'm trying to do the Russell T. Davis version of a writer. I've got ideas. But at the same time, in the meantime, the jobbing work comes in and I'm writing for other people. So in that sense, that's why I feel like half a writer, probably, sometimes.
I mean, his diary, A Writer's Tale, is possibly one of the most honest tales I've heard of a writing process. And if you haven't read it, you should. It's fantastic.
No, I haven't actually. No.
It really is amazing. With the stand-up, do you not find that the stand-up is a little bit more tangible? And I think that's why I partly started doing it after my first few writing jobs.
Mm.
I couldn't connect with the laughter that was on, you know, that was a TV audience. So I felt, not compelled, but I wanted to go on stage and get something much more immediate.
Yeah, I'll give you that, certainly. Stand-up comedy, they say stand-up is a bit of a drug, and I can quite see why, because I gave it up for a little while last year, but I came back to it very quickly because you do miss that instant kick of saying a thing that you've written and then said out loud, and there's an instant laugh.
Yeah.
Whereas, and with the writing, it is great as well, in that you write something and then it goes back and forth in various meetings, and then 6 to 9 months later you see it on TV said by someone else in a show that when the credits come up it says written by someone else and your name's, you know, down the list there. Even though you go, well, that joke said there was mine, and it got a laugh on the soundtrack, so hooray! But of course,
it just doesn't feel like yours, does it?
Yeah, stand up, that happened in 3 seconds.
You can literally write the joke 10 minutes before you go on and find out straight away.
Exactly,
where it works.
You can write it. You can make it up on the spot, even though, of course, that doesn't fulfil the job of writing, which is what we're talking about.
Well, I don't know, does it? I think it probably does, actually. I mean, you may not necessarily be typing at that point.
True,
are writing.
If it comes from you and it's original to you, then sure, yeah, it's something conceived by yourself and created. So yeah, no, I that's why I think stand-up is the dirtier version. It is the drug. It is the addictive section, I think, whereas writing seems a bit more, put it this way, my parents always keep on saying to me, oh yeah, one day, Paul, you're going to give up the stand-up and you'll be a writer. You know, you can tell that's what sort of, oh yeah, then we'll be proud of you. but no, they don't say that. But, you know, they see much more, writing's the the 9-to-5. That's the real job, isn't it? That's the sit down, start work at a certain time, finish at a certain time at a desk, and then be home in the evening to, you know, cook dinner for the family sort of thing. Whereas stand up is the flighty, get up at noon, drive across the country, get back at 4 in the morning, eating Ginster's pasties.
Yeah, eating Ginster's pasties till your innards rot, essentially.
Pretty much.
So exactly. What was your first check then? I mean, you're talking about the Stephen King version. What was the first paid work you got?
I remember it well. It was a £10 check from the BBC for a joke on the news headlines on Radio 2 back in the day.
That's great. I mean, that's such a shame that the headlines isn't there anymore, because it was
filled a great job for it. It sort of took over from weekending on Radio 4. You see a lot of writers. If you meet any writer over sort of 30 or so, who's sort of working in radio or TV, normally weekending will come up in the first 5 minutes, because everyone sort of went through that. And this was before email and all that, so you would drive across the country, get trains, whatever, turn up and just sit in a massive room at the BBC and not be paid for any of it until you submitted a joke that they liked. And yeah, that then went, news headlines did a little bit of that for a little while. In fact, my first joke was put on there. I only ever had one joke on there, because I thought, brilliant, I will get part of this show. And this has been, it's the longest running, in fact, had the world record for longest running radio comedy show in the world, I think, at the time. And then I submitted a joke and it got on. It was in fact the first joke of that episode, which was the last of the series. And at the end of the episode, he said, oh, well, I'm leaving to go to Coronation Street.
Oh, man. So you had the first joke in the last episode.
Exactly. When I thought it was a bankable job. I thought, this show will never end. It's been going for 40 years. Oh, no, I arrive and it ends.
So
oh,
did
dear.
You kill it?
I think I did. I think I killed the news headlines. Yeah.
So how did that lead on to the writer's bursary, which, just for anyone listening, is it a year's placement at BBC Radio where you essentially will write for everything?
Yeah, exactly. It's a year's, well, it's again what my parents would call a proper job, in that you have a salary for a year. It's the only time I've ever had a salary in my life, really. And yeah, for the BBC, their part, it works well because it's paid for out of a sort of larger budget, and therefore each little show can use you and it's already been paid for. So it's all about budgets and departments and things. But it does mean that if there's a sketch show or a struggling show on it's all radio, you know, Radio 4, Radio 2. And if there's a show that thinks, oh, we could do with another writer, but we can't afford it because we're a small, struggling show, we haven't got the budget for it, then there's all right. There's one of us sat in the corner and we can, you know, we've already been paid for. So we just sort of sit there and wait and go to whichever producer wants us. So, yeah, it was axed for a little while. It wasn't banned, I don't think. Particularly bad when I...
You didn't kill the bursary as well.
I didn't kill the bursary, no, exactly. Well, no, it was brought back, actually, the year that I applied for it, and I did it with a guy called Roger Crooks, who now does a lot for the News Quiz, and he did Head Cases on ITV, which is the sort of CGI spitting image thing. So, yeah, it can be a nice little helpful step, really, in the right direction.
And was it?
Yeah, I think so, because it's a great way, for our part, we're there keen to work with as many producers as possible, because I've always said that the really important thing with writing is I think, to, if you can befriend a producer, or ideally lots of producers, because one won't be enough, really, then you've just got someone who will listen to you and read your pitch if you send them something, because they see so many of them that's the tricky thing, really. And this is a great chance to actually get to know all the producers who are there. Sadly, most of them have now left, so pointless now, but never mind. but yeah, it's a great way of just getting a foot in the door with that, as well as also getting experience in writing different sorts of shows. So we were working on sketch shows and on sitcoms and on topical shows like the Now Show and the News Quiz, things like that. So it's a good way of trying a bit of everything and hopefully getting better at it.
Whilst you were trying those things, did you find there was anything you couldn't write?
Interesting question. I don't know. I always struggled. I've always been a joke writer. I think I realised that doing that. And so we wrote for myself and Rodri wrote an episode of Hudson and Pepperdine, which was a sort of narrative comedy, kind of sitcomy, but more about their characters. That they are sort of, it's one of these where they are acknowledging that they're actors at the same time as having a caper that week. And we wrote that, and I think I did find that quite a steep learning curve. Because up to that point, I hadn't really acknowledged it myself, but I had done largely either one-liners or sketches or, you know, nothing more than about 5 minutes worth of thing. Because it's easier to get that is the way in for writers, really. Mm. And these open-door shows on radio and on TV, what few there are, do really welcome writers who, you know, they say, we'll use one of your jokes. They're not going to go straight and say, great, we'll use that half hour you've written. They're going to use a 5-second joke because they don't want to try too much too soon. And as a result, I was working on those jokes for years and then realised that actually the narrative comedy, when you get to sort of plot and narrative and character and things like that, it's a whole different kettle of fish, really.
And have you since got better at that?
Well, I think to a point, but again, I think because I was working on those radio shows, and for me, that then leapt off to do things like working with Lee Mack and Not Going Out and Miranda Hart's new sitcom, things like that. I've since been, I think, sort of stereotyped a little bit as the gag monkey, which I'm fine with. I'm happy for all the work, certainly. But it does mean that whenever I've sort of said to a producer, oh, and I could write an episode for the series, you can tell, I think, yeah, but let's just for now, let's have you as gag monkey.
Was that actually your official title?
That was my official. If you look at the credits, when it shrinks down on TV, you'll see a gag monkey.
So from the bursary, did you then, it wasn't straight into Not Going Out, was it? I mean, you must have done something in between.
Yeah, well, the journey was, in fact, your earlier question, which I never quite answered properly, was how to get from News Headlines to bursary. And so the brief journey, I should probably say, was News Headlines, that finished. And then I wrote for another open door show, which was Parsons and Naylor on Radio 2. And then I did that for about 5 series. I did that for quite a bit. And then again, it was knowing the producer that really helped. The producer on that I got on very well with. And she then went to the News Quiz, I think it was, and then she left the News Quiz, so I was then stuck on the News Quiz, and then another producer came in who then worked with Lee Mack on the Lee Mack show. So that was helpful to get in with Lee Mack, but in the meantime, the producer of Parsons and Naylor was putting forward names for this bursary, and each producer puts forward, I think, 1 or 2 names, and she put forward myself, and so that's how I got the job for that year. And then, of course, yeah, as I say, then worked for a whole smattering of shows, including Lee Mack, which was really my I don't want to say my ticket out of radio, because radio's great and it's lovely. I really enjoy radio. It's a lovely, great format, and a great to get things made much quicker than TV without running it past layer upon layer of BBC executive.
I think Miranda works so well on TV because it's found its feet to an extent on the radio.
Yes, yes. And you look at the history of it, and so many shows, you know, from Mary Whitehouse, Alan Partridge, yeah, all these things started on League of Gentlemen, Little Britain, all started on radio. Although I was chatting to a TV producer not too long ago, and you could tell they didn't seem to know much of what was on the radio at the minute, or even for the last few years. And you did get the impression, I'd always in my head thought, oh, well, the TV bods have got their eyes on radio all the time to see what the next big thing is coming through. And that didn't seem to be quite the case.
So how did Not Going Out work as a process? I mean, was it table writing? Were you in a room with other writers? Were you sent off to polish scripts?
We've tried the works, I think, on Not Going Out. I think it's fair to say. It's every series, it's changed slightly. And that's largely because Lee was keen to do a slightly American style of writing, which is, of course, in America, it's more like 15, 20 people around a table. But in America, they've got the budgets for that, and they throw, you know, they're very well paid for coming in and doing that. They don't really have the budgets for it over here, so we've that's why we've sort of struggled on it, I think, a little bit. So we've tried a sort of slimmed down version of that with 4 or 5 of us in a room around a table, and someone else will go off and write the scripts, the sort of bare bones of it, and then we come back and some jokes for that. First series, actually, I went in the office. It was Lee Mack and Andrew Collins who were writing that, and I went in. I joined them after about an episode, so they'd already written up that one and storylined some ideas for the other ones. And so we went in, and I was there for a summer, really. And that was a day-in, day-out thing for 3 months or so of just working with them. And Andrew was there. Andrew's worked on EastEnders and various sitcoms before, so he's got the narrative thing. And then, of course, Lee is a stand-up as well, but he's keen to learn all this. So generally, Andrew is sort of telling us, well, no, at this point in the story, it has to be a bit like this. And then Lee would say, great, I want something like this then. And then myself, Gag Monkey in the corner, would go, how about this? And yeah, it was a team effort, really. But that was generally sort of the rough order of things. So yeah, and then as each series has gone on and it's picked up viewers, they've got more writers for it. And the last series, they really sort of got other writers to write the full sitcom script. And then we ask guys come in and gag it up. But in a lot of shows, gagging up is a sort of brief process, and you do a day or two on, you know, if it's already been written. For Not Going Out, because Lee is such a, you know, he wants every other line to be a joke. I think they do say industry standard's meant to be 3 jokes a page, and I'm Not Going Out, he's after 8 jokes a page, I think.
Really?
So yeah, as a result, you know, it's gagging up sort of trivializes it a little bit. It's writing and rewriting and rewriting and rewriting, and getting phone calls on a Sunday saying, I've sent over a script, can we have it back by Monday morning, sort of thing.
So obviously during all this time you're working on your own projects.
Yes.
Is this where you're learning your kind of craft with the narrative in the wider sort of half-hour structure? I remember us being at a party one time at your house, actually, where you took me to one side and you took me through how you'd broken down an episode of Curb.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, yeah.
And you'd kind of learned the structure of Curb, and did that kind of feed into your work at all? Did you actually take that away and apply it, or was it just an exercise?
I think to a point, but I occasionally do that. Probably about once a year, I pick on one sitcom and go, oh, actually, I really like that sitcom. How have I done that? Or if you watch an episode of, I don't know, Seinfeld or Friends or Coupling, I don't know, whatever it is, whatever is the thing of the day, really. And you think, they've cracked it. Whatever they've done there, they've cracked it. And then you look at it and you break it apart a bit and go, okay, so that character's doing that there. And it's wonderful. They've got a formula. But then you try and apply that to something else and you go, well, no, that's the Curb formula, or that's the Seinfeld formula, or whatever. That works for them. And each show does sort of have to find their own to a point. But I do think you can learn a lot, and I think it's certainly to be recommended watching other sitcoms if you want to be a sitcom writer.
Have you ever written, just as an exercise, an episode of Seinfeld, an episode of Coupling?
I started, actually. I'm really good at starting things. I've got a laptop full of started projects. I started writing, well, years ago, my first ever thing I wrote before I was ever sold any sort of writing thing or even thought of stand-up, was I wrote an episode of Blackadder when I was about 14, probably. What was it called? Black Andreas. It was the Roman version I decided to try and invent.
Oh, I see. So you actually put it in its own setting. And
yeah, I had this idea. I was going to send it off to the BBC and they were going to go, brilliant, Richard Curtis has stopped, but Paul Carenza will start. And that was age 14. So, but I think since I've had a quick go at a Curb, I think. But then I sort of started just a bit of fun. And then it was taking too long. And in America, of course, that's a great thing to do because that is the way you get into TV over there, yep, is by writing a spec script for a show that already exists. And it will never be made. And I've heard of guys who work on Family Guy who used to write spec scripts of The Simpsons to get into Family Guy. Because it's this thing, you don't write the spec script of the show you're applying for. You write for something similar.
Well, they legally can't read it, can they?
Which, that's right, yeah. They legally can't read it. And as well as that, they'd be really going, well, we do it better. So thanks anyway.
Yeah.
But in America, so it's more encouraged. But over here, of course, you can't really, apart from it as an exercise, you know, it's certainly worth doing if you can afford the time to do it as an exercise. But then after a while, I thought, okay, well, let's just try and work up something of my own here. And I'm now actually spending about 3 or 4 mornings a week writing a sitcom with a co-writer of mine in London. And we used to meet up once a week or so, but because I don't live in London, it was always a bit of a commute and all that, a bit sort of hard work. And actually, now we do it on Skype, it's actually much easier. And yeah, we are learning, I think, from each other quite a lot. And we really ask ourselves sort of quite testing questions about this. Whereas in the old days, I think I was a bit guilty. I had an idea with a radio producer for a little while, and we went back and forth on it. But I was definitely guilty of being a slave to the joke. And I think that's the biggest bad habit I've had to unlearn.
Could you not, in your head, think that what you have been doing is you've been handed a structure, which you have then been gag monkeying up? Are you not then just taking one step down the line in that process where you're making the structure of the script?
Well, certainly, yeah, exactly. And that's countlessly what I keep attempting to do. The trouble is, if I'm writing this, in my head, I'm always thinking, okay, here's the structure, and you've got to be so brutal, really, and just say, okay, what would, if you're doing a sort of realistic show, unless you're doing like a Father Ted where it's a flight of fancy sort of thing, if you're doing a show which is meant to be set in a real universe, you've got to keep asking, what would the character do here? What would the character say here? Yes, you can work to funny moments in the scene, but they've got to come out of what would actually happen, really. And the trouble is, every time I do this, I'd come in and go, oh, but you know what would be funny here is if this would happen and this would happen, and that means that he could say this.
Right. So you're aiming to the joke rather than...
Exactly. And that's what I always used to do. And then now I'm writing with this other guy, and he's much more of a narrative plot guy. So I'm learning from him quite a lot. And he can see my bad habits creeping in again. He can see it when I'm going, oh, I've got this great idea. What we do is we do this and set up this thing. And he's going, yeah, but why is he wearing slippers? I say, oh, you'll find it later. It's hilarious. You'll find it later. And I go, no, but it doesn't. We'd be watching it now going, but why is he wearing slippers? And so it does have to come from somewhere real. And I think that's very important. And then, of course, by all means, add layer upon layer of joke later. But yeah, I think that's a tough lesson to learn.
What's your process with your co-writer at the moment? I mean, are you just planning out the episodes beat by beat, then writing a script and then rewriting?
Yeah.
Rewriting?
Yeah, we're doing a beat sheet. And we hammer out some episode ideas. Because it's still an idea, we're still working up that we've done a couple of attempts at a pilot, but we're deliberately trying to write a couple so that we can look at which is the best, really. And as a result, we have occasionally had a couple of moments where we think, we've set up these characters, we've got our formula, we've got these characters, we think this and this, but would this character not be better a bit like this? So we're tweaking as we go and adding characters, subtracting characters, multiplying characters, dividing characters, and as a result, it is quite a mathematical show, in fact. It's about a maths teacher, so that does explain it. But yeah, so we are hammering out episode ideas and then tweaking as we go the actual setup of the show. And then once we land an idea, then working out a beat sheet for the show and working out every sort of step along the way. And again, we are finding it very difficult to stop ourselves from actually writing the thing.
You actually physically want to get it right before you write it.
Well, exactly, because it's so easy to, you think, oh, but this would be a great thing to write. And you think, we've got an idea for it, I'll just write it. And then, of course, you get halfway through and you find all the problems that would not be there if you had spent a bit of time doing a proper outline of the episode. And by an outline of the episode, I always thought in the old days, when I was writing this idea at radio before, I'd think, OK, I'll just put scene one at the dentist. So-and-so comes in and says a thing. There you go. Scene two. And then, you know, and so it'd be half a page, probably. And needs to be really, I think, a couple of pages. The nice thing is, if you do that and if you get it really right, because there's two of us in this process as well, because I'm writing with another guy, it's nice if we can both give each other the outline and then write the scene. And there's enough information in the outline that we both write quite a similar scene. That's sort of what we're heading for, really.
So you don't sit in a room or sit on Skype and write together. You will take a scene each.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, I see. Okay. I found that when I started to really pre-plan the structure, the actual writing became easier and weirdly more spontaneous, in the sense that you know where you're going and you know where you've got to get to.
Yes.
But I've always likened the pre-planning as building the chassis of a car. It needs to be done, and all chassis are very similar, and it's what you build on top of that, which turns it into a Mini or a Ferrari or whatever. But then we get to what I can't do very well, which is rewriting.
Right.
I'm not great at it. How do you handle rewriting?
I think I do like it in a way. I like putting on layer upon layer of the funny stuff and also then correcting past mistakes, because I'm terrible for, I write it out and I look at it and go, yeah, is that right? I'm not entirely sure. Does that work? The trouble I've had before is I've written on my own before, and this is now when I'm finding the benefit of writing with someone else, is that we're rewriting each other's work as well as our own work. We do come back and look at it and go, actually, that scene I wrote yesterday is, you know, wrong for these reasons. But I think you are actually, even your own work, you're rewriting because you know it's going to go to this other guy in a minute, and it's a bit embarrassing if it goes to him and it's clearly, you know, cross it all out and try again. Whereas fan writing on my own, of course, it is a lot more difficult to rewrite, because part of you is thinking, well, if I wrote it right last time, how am I going to change it this time? Because I wrote it then, and you know, how do you do it now? But you do need to keep on coming back to it with fresh eyes, really. And sometimes you look through it and you have a particular day, you think, okay, well, I'm going to look at this with realism spectacles now and then make sure this is watertight for that no one will look at it and say, well, the logic of that wouldn't lead to that. And sometimes look at it and think, it's just not funny enough. It just needs to be funnier.
Yeah. I don't mind that so much. I don't mind kind of going through with a red pen going, there needs to be a joke here, joke here, joke here, joke here. It's taking a scene that kind of isn't working and going, right, I need to actually remove that whole scene.
The tough thing always is when you've spent some time on something and you think, it's one of my little babies, it's got to go.
Yeah, killing your baby, isn't it?
It is, rather, isn't it? It is, yeah.
So have you written any other genres? Have you tried a drama script? I know you were talking earlier before we were recording about a book for a musical and things like that.
Yeah, I haven't tried much on drama. Again, I've had a couple of ideas, but I've got a laptop full of these just random ideas, and then it's only when I sort of get a bit of time and think, right, let's try and write one of them. But I always come back to writing something comedic, because just my background, really. And tried a bit of musical. I've written a couple of plays. In fact, there's a play I wrote at school which we're doing. There's my school's 500 years old next year, and so they're having an arts festival, and so we're going to put the play on again as we did in the sixth form, and all the guys who are in it are still local, so we're all going to...
So your play was the best play in 500 years?
I like to think so, and that includes Shakespeare, I'm happy to say. So I'd like to think... My play's the only one that's still around, I think, you know, it's Shakespeare stuff. No one's heard of it.
Yeah, no, who is he? This Bill Shakespeare type.
I know. So actually, I'm spending a bit of time now going through that script that I haven't looked at since I was 16 and rewriting it. Because in my head, of course, I'm thinking, oh, it was brilliant then, it was wonderful, it was comedy gold. You look at it now and go, ah, that's pretty bad, actually. That's why did no one tell me
the first time you looked at it, was it kind of heart-wrenching? Did you think, my God, I've just destroyed a memory of what I thought was...
A little bit. I think there is an element that you shouldn't, you know, don't go back, look forward. But, you know, we're going back and we're committed. It's in the diary, so we have to do it now. Because I wanted to do a bit of, kind of mix the genres a bit, and I've done some TV and radio stuff for a little while and the stand-up, and I thought it'd be nice to do a play again. So I thought, well, if we can just sort of dig this one out and maybe give it a rewrite, it might be something that could have a bit of life after this bizarre reunion event we're doing at school. But we'll see. I don't know. I enjoy. I think I've always been a fan of this idea of having lots of things on the go at once, which is perhaps why it takes so long for anything to actually happen for me. But I think lots of irons in the fire can be helpful in that if you get, for a start, if you get an idea for one thing, but it doesn't quite fit, you can think, well, it's not going to work for the stand-up, but it will work for the play or the sitcom script or whatever. And as well as that, it can take so long that if you sent off a script to a TV producer, rather than sit there twiddling your thumbs, you think, right, well, what can we do next then? And I think it's important to have a few things on the go there.
I also think it just helps when you come to a block in a script, you can put it away for you can do something else.
Exactly.
That kind of,
yeah,
kind of leads on to my final question, really, which is, with all those irons in the fire, do you find that actually combats the procrastination element of writing?
Well, it can do, sir. I mean, you know, and again, who has time to write the TV sitcom script, the film script, the musical, when you've got Twitter and Facebook? You know, that's the thing. So there's just not enough hours in the day for it all. Plus, I do a podcast. Plus, I do a blog. There's too much going on. In fact, the podcast, as of this week, we're now making it fortnightly rather than weekly.
Do you want to just quickly plug that?
Well, it's called Movie Banter. It's about, if you don't like films, then don't bother. But if you do like films, then it's like
who
a, it's a
doesn't
film
like films?
Exactly. Yeah. So. It's also very tricky to find time not only to do the podcast but to watch the films. Every week I'm thinking I need to watch at least a couple of films to review them. And so you do get days, like for example today I'm driving to Norwich for a gig, and Norwich is one of those places that's always a little bit further than you think it's going to be, so I'm going to want to leave in good time for it. And what I should do is take my laptop, which I will do. I'll take my laptop and I'll think, yes, I will get there early, I will open up and I will have an office there in the theatre, and I will work and I will do 3 hours of writing. What I'll probably do is get there and go, oh, cinema, oh yes, let's go and
ooh,
see a
Wi-Fi
film. Exactly, that's the thing. Procrastination is the biggest enemy, I think, to any writer, really.
I think it's also a really good ally, to a certain extent.
It can be, yeah.
I think, was it Graham Linehan talking to Charlie Brooker about it? It just builds ideas into the subconscious, just kind of stockpiles them, like you might be looking at Twitter, and might then fit a script.
I definitely say as well that one of the worst things you could do as a writer is just sit in an office every day with a blank piece of paper and think, oh, an idea will come. And instead, no, I've got friends who are actresses and run their own websites, things like that. So I meet up with them for lunch, or then we'll go and see a film, or have a wander around the shops, and, or indeed you have a look on the internet and just follow a link that follows to another link, and after about an hour, you know, and if you do these things, you will fill your head with different things, hopefully. And there's so many big ideas for films and plays and the like, which come from either a news story they've seen in the paper, or it's been springboarded off another idea. And so, yeah, you've just got to sort of find those ideas, really, and that will surely help your writing process as well.
Thank you very much for chatting to me.
No worries.